This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 71. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we have a chat with Pitch Vision's batting coach, Gary Palmer. We also have a chat with Will James, lead psychologist with the ECB. And David has a fact for us for the number 71. Entertain us, David.
Well, I kind of do. It's because that recently there was the second highest 10th wicket stand in One Day Internationals, Pakistan against New Zealand. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I
missed. In November last year, there was a 100 last wicket partnership, 103 between Mohammad Amir and Saeed Amjal for Pakistan.
So
that's pretty good going. With considering they were about 100 for 9 and they ended up 200 and something. All out, so that's pretty good. But that made me have a look at what the other high stands were. And the fourth highest was Joel Garner and Andy Roberts, who played in a game in 1983 against India in the World Cup and managed a 71 partnership. But that, amazingly, that's not the most remarkable West Indian 10th wicket partnership. Because probably the most famous one is also the world record is when England played the West Indies in 1984, and Viv Richards broke the record at the time for the highest score in one-day international cricket by scoring 189, and a big chunk of that was in the partnership with Michael Holding in the 10th wicket. They managed to put on 106 for the last wicket, and when you consider Richards got 189, and the next highest score on the scorecard was 26.
Oh, wow.
And the West Indies scored 272, and out of those 272, Viv Richards got 189. That says to me that he wasn't too bad a player. Of course, when West Indies went on to win that after England had them 166 for 9, they got 272, and then England were bowled out for 168. So that it just goes to show, you're never out of a game as long as you've got someone like Viv Richards at the crease.
Yep, us telling us always, isn't it, David?
Oh, it just goes to show you shouldn't ever give up. I mean, even if you haven't got Viv Richards, it just goes to show you should never give up, because just when you think all is lost, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly, David. I should probably tell you about my game on the weekend, which was the last of our season.
Oh, okay. So you didn't. So it's official now. You didn't make it to the finals.
Yeah. Well, before the results were released for this week, we sort of needed a few results to go our way. But The team coming first actually lost outright to the team coming fifth. So they leapfrogged to third, and we're pushed back to fifth now. So the results didn't really go our way. But In the end, we probably didn't deserve to be in the top four. We were a bit shabby the second half of the season. But we've been happy with how we've been playing and how we've sort of moved forward through every game. But yeah, on the weekend, David, we managed to finish off our game in style.
Yeah.
Beat the team coming last outright. So great. We got the full 10 points from that game. And at the end, instead of our captain sort of rewarded us tail enders by making us open the batting to knock off the 30 runs to win. So that was pretty interesting as well for me, walking out to open the batting. So it's been a game of highlights, David. So trying out new things in my bowling, in my batting. So a good way to finish off the season.
And did you knock off the runs? Did you score the winning boundary and all that?
Yeah, I finished it off with a 6, so I was pretty happy with that.
You finished with a 6?
Yep.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that's the way to do it, isn't it? Do it in style, exactly.
So yeah.
So that was a good result, although in the end it didn't matter. But how do you think the season went overall for the team and for you personally?
From a team perspective, David, I think for the first season together with a lot of new players, I mean, we all don't really know each other that well. Mm. We've sort of bonded really well together. And even though throughout the second half of the season, we sort of had a few losses, we've been really close in our loss. Whatever happens, we don't really blame anyone else. Everyone's sort of encouraging each other on the field, which is, I think, what we wanted to achieve out of this season, first of all, sort of that unity in the team first. And I think next season we'll probably be looking at fighting for a top two finish. In terms of performance on the park, we weren't as good. I mean, looking back, I don't think there was one game where we actually put in our best performance in our batting, bowling and fielding together. We've always been a bit shabby in certain departments. So that's probably one area we have to work, sort of finishing off games by performing in all departments. Now that we have our unity, I can only see us going forward from here on in. On a personal point of view, I think it's been a massive challenge this year for me because I think it's the first time I've played in a team as a senior player, even though I'm not the oldest player in the team, but I'm one of the players that knows all the guys, whereas there's a lot of groups that don't know each other, so I was sort of the middleman. That was interesting as well because it put me in a sort of leadership role to manage all our players together. And as well as that, in my bowling, for the first time ever, I had to be like a containing bowler rather than a wicket-taking bowler, which I've been in my previous season. So that, for the first time, was a massive learning curve because I'm not used to containing. I'm usually used to going for heaps of runs and getting a few wickets. But trying to contain while the guy at the other end, the wicket-taking bowler, was taught me a lot about how I have to approach my cricket. And towards the end of the season is when I actually learned a lot about how I should bowl and how I should approach certain batsmen.
And what would you say the reason the team gelled together so well was? Because it doesn't always happen like that, a new team. It can go either way, can't it? So why do you think your team sort of came together so effectively?
It should all go down to the captain, David. He sort of, from the word go, his main priority was getting the team to know each other. So whether it be going out for drinks or even after a net session, just hanging around, having a chat, he sort of didn't want any player just going off after a net session straight away, going home. He just wanted everyone to sort of have a chat with each other, get to know each other. And then even with batting, he'd get people to pair up and talk to each other. Or just certain activities that'll pair people who haven't met each other before, aren't as comfortable with each other, to get to know each other. And through instances like that, everyone sort of became mates and we all just sort of gelled together through that. So I think it all went down to the captain's priorities, because the captain could have easily come out and said, our priority this season is to come in the top four. And players wouldn't have got to know each other. Even though we were, say, we finished in the top four, we wouldn't have that unity in our team.
And why do you think, looking at the other side of it, the bit that went wrong, if you like, why do you think the team weren't quite up to doing everything well all the time?
Simple, Dave. I think a lack of practice and lack of match practice.
Right.
I mean, every time you saw us in the close situations, whether it be in our bowling, batting or fielding, our inexperience showed in situations like that. And we could clearly tell that we lacked practice, whereas other teams just finished it off because they've been together. They've either been together for so long or they practiced the right way, which is something we were sort of lacking, practicing in match situations. As much as we tried to, we sort of, our goals in the nets weren't really match situation types of practice. We'd really practice our technical side of things or practice a certain shot, but we never practiced certain situations, as in we have to try and last these amount of overs. Even if we tried, it sort of turned into a big game of a slogfest or something. So I think that's something we should concentrate on for next season, having actual match practice, even if it means getting a trial game together, a couple of trial games together before the season, to sort of get our minds right about how we want to approach the season.
You think you can do that, do you? I mean, we do that every season in our league. We have 2, 3, 4 pre-season games before we even start. So, but you, I remember at the start of your season, you were saying, no, we don't do that. But that's something that can be set up, is it?
Yeah, we can go and approach other teams to set it up. I mean, the club doesn't set it up themselves, but if we want a trial game, we can approach. Because a lot of the other teams we're mates with. I mean, I know a couple of captains from other teams. So if we wanted to approach them and say, look, we want to practice and you'd go to practice as well, so be good for a trial game, I'm sure they'd be happy to do it. And I know a few teams that have done it as well. Although it hasn't been official, I mean, they just get together and after the club's approval, they get together and have a preseason game. So it can be set up. It's not. It can't be officially set up, but it can be set up. So that's probably something we'll try and organise before the next season.
Yeah, I think it does make a difference. I mean, apart from anything else, it gets you, your body back into the feeling of playing cricket again before you're into the stuff that actually counts.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter how much you go to the gym and it doesn't matter how much you bowl in the net. It just isn't the same as playing. And you can even do, as we talk about very often, you know, do scenarios where you set up a situation in the middle and you just have the guys who aren't batting, you have them fielding and all the rest of it. But as you say, it doesn't always work. But if you actually have an opposition there and you have an actual game situation there, you know, that is the best way to do it. So yeah, I'm a big believer in playing lots of cricket, because that is the only way that you're going to get match fit and psychologically ready for cricket is by playing cricket. There's only so much you can do in practice.
Well, even if it is in trial games, David, I was having a chat with our captain and he said there's a couple of 2020 tournaments and sort of gala day tournaments before our season, which could actually help our team. Even if it's a 2020 comp, it'll help us sort of just get out there and have a bat or have a ball, field, and that could sort of get our bodies warmed up as well. So that's been an idea thrown around as well, which could work out.
Yeah, the more the better, really. I mean, there's a limit. I mean, especially in this country, there's a limit to what you can do. You don't want to be starting playing cricket too early.
Yes.
Because it's, you'd be either be playing in a bog or playing in snow or something like that. But we start as early as we can and we get in. We were just talking about it last night. We were just arranged our pre-season friendlies now. So, yeah, we've got three of those. And so by the start of May, which is the start of our season, we'll be ready. In fact, we've got a game at three pre-season games, then our first league game, and then another friendly match straight away afterwards to really get us into the swing of things. So by the second match, we'll have had four warm-up games, if you like.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we're all very hopeful. We're all very hopeful that things are going to be going well. But it's still a while to go yet. So we've got to find some things to talk about by for next week. But I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about.
Yeah, it's cricket, David. There's always plenty to talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Gary Palmer is back again to have a chat with us. And Gary was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps young players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Let's just have a listen to what Gary has to say for us this week.
Hi, Gary. Welcome back.
Hi, David.
Now, this week, we haven't got a specific question, but I've noticed over the last few weeks, we've been getting a lot of questions around creativity in batting. So I think possibly with the growth of 2020 cricket and the way that teams are easily scoring over 300 in 50-over cricket international level now, a lot of young players, up-and-coming talented cricketers, are feeling the pressure to try and learn all these different shots, you know, the flick over the head or steering over the slips, reverse sweeps, or all the switch hits, those kind of things. Where do you stand on learning these kind of techniques and teaching players at various talent levels how to do all these different types of shots?
Well, because of all the shots you've talked about in 2020 cricket, and there are a number of inexperienced coaches out there that think that's what all players need to be doing, and it does cause conflict. And you get questioned, people can get questioned quite a lot because, you know, a lot of coaches will say, you know, young players, you've got to express yourself and you want to try this and you want to try that. And there's not only, you know, you can play the straight drive three or four different ways. And I feel quite strongly about this. And I think that this is my take on it. The coach leads the player with expert knowledge. The player must listen and execute those techniques that the coach is trying to help that player with, right? So there's no ego involved here. If you've got the right coach and you're a player, whether you're a club cricketer or an international cricketer, if you back that coach because he knows the systems and how the system works of playing all the various shots in the V, you need to take on board what he or she is saying and try and play front foot and back foot shots in the V as perfectly as you can, with as much detail as you can. If that coach knows what they're talking about, the coach must lead that, and then the player will progress really, really quickly. And that player will get more belief in their performance, more self-belief, because they've got good, sound, basic technique. And it will enhance their performance. Having said that, once that player now has the tools in place, that player needs to then go and bolt on their own flair and get their own individuality. And the player can now express themselves using different game plans. And I think that part of development of a cricketer should be led by the player, not the coach. It's a two-way thing. You know, the coach gives you the technique because he knows, you know, that's what you're supposed to be doing. These are the systems that work. These are the tools. Right, now you've got these tools. I want you to express yourself. And through trial and error, in different match-type situations, that player will find out how far they can stretch their flair, how many game plan options they can develop, just through, you know, success and failure. You know, and the experiences they gain in the matches will mould their flair and self-belief on what they can or think they can and can't do within a match. And if you want to try and flip one over your head like Dushan does, or play a reverse sweep or a left-handed switch hit, that's fine. And the coach will work with the player, and they can chat about, you know, how's it going, is it working, what do you want to try next. But when it comes to the real core basics, the coach needs to be stepping in, sort of telling the player, "Say this is, you know, I've seen a slight error occurring here, we need to tighten that up." That must be driven by the coach. But the coach really does have to know what they're talking about, because if they don't, then it can be counterproductive.
How much leeway as a coach would you give to someone with regards to technique before moving on, the basic techniques, before moving on to the more advanced stuff? Because obviously someone who's just learning, you know, you wouldn't want them to be even thinking about some of the shots that they see on the TV. But maybe you're working with a higher level player, or someone in an academy, or someone even playing first class cricket. How much leeway on the basics do you give them, because they want to put their flair on top of it?
Well, with my own academy lads, because I'm passionate and I want to see them do well, I will want to see front foot drives, back foot drives in the V, technically perfect, right? And we do enough grooving with tennis balls and machines at different angles and grooving for long periods of time to be able to achieve that. And then once I've achieved that, then I want to get them looking to play the off spinner, the left arm spinner, just advise them on where they should put their feet to, again, do the basics, play a good defence shot, play you milk it for two or drive it down the ground. When they can do that well, and the same goes for playing swing bowling, when they can do that well, then we'd set them up with some options on how to improvise. But my first option would be straight down the ground. So all the coaching that you're doing is like building blocks. And you're doing everything for a reason, and one stacks up on top of the other one. And when you've got all the low risk areas covered, and you've practiced them a lot, and you can do them really well, I would hope that my players might go, actually, I've got that good a technique that I don't need to play a left-handed shot. I don't need to play a switch hit. The problem we're going to get in this country is kids are going to go into their school games, bat really well for 25, and then think, oh, I'm in, now I'm playing well, what should I do? I'm going to do a switch here, I'm going to do a left-handed. Because they're quite impressionable. They follow the big stars on the telly, and then they'll get out. And these shots could be the difference between a boy getting in the school first team or not getting in the school first team, getting a contract at a first-class county or not getting a contract, playing in the second team and getting 38 instead of 100. So, you know, it's all very well when you watch test players do it, but they are already there. They've already played county cricket. They've already got into test match cricket, so they have made it. And they've played that much cricket. You know, they can push the boundaries a little bit more. But, you know, quite a lot of these blokes didn't actually play all these fancy shots on the way to getting into pro cricket. Obviously, now they're starting to do it more because it's a trendy thing to do. But it's a fine line between trendy shots looking good, you know, and actually playing the bread and butter shots and winning the game for the team. End of the day, your job is to get in there, get a score, good score or a good partnership, get a good total on the board for the team and win a match. I mean, Ian Botham used to smash it to all parts in one-day cricket, as did Viv Richards. You know, do you think if they had a left-handed switch here and a reverse sweep, that would have made them smash it more? Probably not. They'd smash it less. But those guys did the basics really well, hit down the ground really well, and when they wanted to sort of pick the ball up wider both sides of the wicket, they could do it. And if they were playing now, they would play exactly the same way. They would just do it to more deliveries, and they would be devastated to bowl at. So let my bottom line is, keep it simple. And where you can swing the bat through with a big blade for as long as you can, which is generally down the wicket straight between mid on and mid off, that's the thing to do. If it's short, yes, you can hook and you can cut, but keep it simple with good basic technique.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching methods, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. We now have part three of our interview with Dr. Will James, the lead psychologist with the ECB. Dr. James has worked with players from the A group right through to the English cricket team, and he now works with a company called Lane 4 that helps businesses with leadership and teamwork. So let's have a listen to Dr. James' chat with David.
There's a common theme in the commercial side of psychology in applying elite sportsman's thinking in a business setting. I hear about that quite a lot. Can it be reversed? Can sport learn anything from the business side of things?
Yes, absolutely. Having a foot in both camps, I recognise massively that whilst for years, you know, people have said, oh, business can learn a lot from sports coaches and sports champions. I think there's as much information go the other way, if not more. And I think things around, you know, real clear goal setting, really clear measurement of objectives. I'm not saying this happens in all organisations, and in all, just like it wouldn't happen in all sports. You know, you're going to get examples of organisations and businesses that don't do this particularly well. But if you look at successful businesses and what they would, the messages they would lend and the lessons they might give to sport, it would be around really clarifying goals and objectives, really painting out and spending time communicating the vision for the club, the team, the individuals. It would spend serious amounts of time on those sort of things and not just play lip service or tick box exercise, some of those things. So whilst time is of a premium, you know, you wouldn't underestimate the importance of contracting, if you like, at the beginning of a season and the beginning of a particular month even. You know, what is it we're all trying to do here? Let's remind ourselves, let's make sure we're all aligned, we're all on the same page. So I think those sort of things particularly come out for me of what tends to happen really well within business. I mean, the other thing is, you know, the ruthlessness of performance. And this may not go down well at recreation level, but if people aren't performing, then they are dropped. You know, that someone else comes up to take their place. That there is, in the high performance business, just like in the high performing teams, you know, the objectivity in which people are measured. And it's not just about runs scored or wickets taken. It's about match contribution. So don't get me wrong. It's not always as simple as, you know, well, he's scoring more runs. It's can do with the partnerships that they're creating, the rate they're scoring runs, the way they help other people score runs, what else they do in the field, and what else they do in and around the dressing room. So there are a number of ways you measure performance, but that's taken very seriously in order that your talent pipeline continues to evolve and continues to develop. And I think the one other thing that you know, as I said, doesn't happen particularly well in business or sport, but we advocate in terms of of helping both those populations in terms of improving high performance is giving really quality feedback to players and to coaches around what they're doing well and what they could do better. And I think the more that people learn that and see that as part of every day, not waiting in, as they do in business, for an annual review, or waiting to the end of the season to have a big sort of debrief, or waiting until you've lost to have a debrief. It's something that happens regularly. It's look, there's two or three things we want you to start, two or three things we'd like you to stop, and a couple of things we want you to continue. You know, it can be as simple and as clear as that.
Don't forget that you can get more information, tips, advice and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the My Cricket Coach Show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 12th of March. If you've been a bit disappointed that we don't have questions, I promise we'll try and have questions next week. So if you want to get in touch or have any questions, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.